Hi, everyone. Today, we'll look at how business leaders can navigate the ongoing paradigm shift around ethics from a risk management tool to a way to build healthier and stronger organizational cultures everywhere. I'm your host, Bill Coffin, and this is the Ethicast. In a world of weaponized transparency, public square accountability, and a swiftly evolving intersection between money and morality, how are businesses supposed to chart the best course forward as ethical organizations? There is no small amount of literature on this very topic, but in a world where renegade CEOs seemingly flaunt the law at will, where corporate brands find years of reputational goodwill vaporized in a single social media post, and where changing tides around ESG make long-term commitments in that space ever more difficult, ethics and compliance has become the role of everyone in an organization, not just its leadership and not just its ethics and compliance professionals. With us today to talk about this is Allison Taylor, a clinical professor at NYU Stern School of Business and executive director at Ethical Systems, a research collaboration based at NYU and focused on building more ethical organizational cultures. Allison is a renowned expert advising large multinationals on risk, corruption, sustainability, and organizational culture. Her book, Higher Ground, How Businesses Can Do the Right Thing in a Turbulent World, was published by Harvard Business Review Press in February 2024. Allison, thanks for joining us today. Congratulations on the book. I've been really looking forward to this conversation.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's such a pleasure to be here and to talk to you.
One of the things that struck me most about Higher Ground is that it does this really great job of presenting an in-depth mission statement to the business world about how business integrity matters and how to operationalize it. So I guess my double-headed question for you is, why did you feel that such a mission statement is necessary at this particular moment in time, given all that's going on in the business world? And how did your decision to write this book reflect the current state of your own professional journey in the ethics space?
Oh, well, that's such a wonderful question to kick off with. And I suppose what I would say is the premise of the book is that we've never been so confused about what it takes to be a responsible business. Quite clearly, we are beyond the point in time where we can say, just focus on shareholder value and don't break the law. Any good ethics and compliance officer, and I know this is a big part of your community, knows that we need to go beyond that to principles, knows that culture is important, knows that leadership is important. But I think when we try to answer questions of how far a business should go to solve a problem like climate change or inequality, then things get a lot more fraught and a lot more tricky. And then the other thing I've observed is that there's a very, very noisy debate and conversation at the moment, epitomized by the debate on whether you are pro or anti ESG, that often loses sight of the point. And so I think even if you're as deep in this world as we are, it can often feel like there's a lot of noise and no one's really getting to the point. But I think if you're not in this world, it all feels like a lot of overwhelming jargon and people yelling at each other. So I have foolishly tried to answer the question of what it would take to be a good business in the 2020s. And I've tried to draw together thinking both from ethics and compliance officers and general counsels, who I spent a lot of my career working with sustainability teams and human rights teams, and then with people that work on culture. And so another way to answer your question is that I spent a long time in different sorts of consulting around responsible business, first in investigations and then in sustainability. I've worked on culture questions as well, but now finding myself at NYU and with a bit more time to think, it's given me a chance to step back and reflect on my career. And also, I'm faced with students asking questions about what to do about these topics every day. And I thought I should write something that might help them.
So you do a great job in Higher Ground of capturing the risk and reward of the swiftly evolving interface between what I mentioned before is money and morality, especially where business is involved. So over the course of your professional travels, can you point to a company that you think provides an especially good example of excellence, not just in the realm of business integrity, but in the area of having evolved as swiftly as the world around it, either to manage one of the many emerging risks you mentioned in your book, or as a way to advance its own ethical identity?
Sure. So I guess my first answer would be I don't love picking poster children. Like, I kind of think part of the problem is we've tried to divide the world into good companies and bad companies. And as we will know, no company is perfect. Every company is an evolving system, and no company is getting everything right on the ethics and sustainability agenda. Organizations evolve constantly. But so I can give you good examples, but I should just first flag that none of these examples are perfect. One that springs to mind that I open and close the book with is Chobani, the yogurt company. They've given their employees ownership. They are private, so they have life a little bit easier in some respects. They're focused very strongly on the US food system, including the agricultural system. And I think most impressively of all, they've managed to hire refugees in very, very Republican parts of the country without suffering the kind of social media backlash you might imagine. And I think that's because they center their culture and they center what they're doing on their impact on employees and on treating workers with dignity and respect. Another organization I really like is the Australian tech company Atlassian. And I think if you look at their sustainability report, you'll see something much clearer and more straightforward and more transparent than we're used to seeing in these kind of documents that includes here's where we failed and here's why. That is not a very common thing for companies to do and say. And so there are more examples, but those I think are two good ones of companies that aren't the biggest, but are really trying to reshape the conversation in productive ways.
We are living in an age where companies in particular are expected to express their values at lightning speed by reacting to moments of political or cultural importance. You have a wonderful chapter in this book that really speaks directly to that. But my question is, you know, how does that reality impact the need for organizations to build meaningful cultures of ethics, given that cultures themselves take much longer timeframes to establish and to change and to nurture and to advance?
Sure. So I think this is such a wonderful question because I think part of what's happened is, right, we've seen this rhetorical shift away from shareholder value into something that's often called stakeholder capitalism. And so there's been a big push, I think, to get CEOs to speak up on behalf of stakeholders, talk about balancing stakeholder interests, talk about meeting stakeholder needs. And it's all understandable and it's all valid. These are real pressures, and companies are in a much more fraught reputational environment. But I think it's often ended up with empty rhetoric about how everything is a win-win and over-promising. Yeah. So you almost hear this kind of attitude of, if any of this company's stakeholders cares vaguely about this thing, this company needs to be solving the problem. And so what we tend to get is a lot of kind of glossy brochures and a lot of ticking the box on 40 things. And I think one of the best routes forward is to be rather laser focused on a couple of things that are directly relevant to how your business creates value, and then to center your ethics efforts on people. The other thing that I think that's really interesting here, and you asked about the role of ethics, is that with this rise of stakeholder capitalism, everyone has been very keen to say that none of this has anything to do with ethics and isn't about ethics, and ethics is too moral and ethics is too ideological. And so I almost think we've got to this crazy situation where it's become the elephant in the room. Human beings care deeply about ethics, care deeply about whether a company is doing the right thing or the wrong thing, but it's almost become taboo outside the ethics and compliance community to say you are making commitments on the basis of values. And so I think we've got to this point where we need to be very clear about things like what the relationship is between ethics and ESG, not least because ESG is becoming so much more regulated.
What do you make of the various backlashes against the embrace of things like ESG and DEI by businesses? And what do you think is really driving this? And what should we expect of all this going forward? I'm kind of curious how best companies can defend themselves and defend their own ethical identities when you have forces in the business world and the political world directly challenging and even villainizing them for it.
Absolutely. So I think part of it is we're very, very polarized. So there is a very kind of binary set of perspectives of one says, just shut up and don't do any of these things about anything, stick to your knitting, go back to business. And then another set of voices says you ought to be out there solving a bunch of intractable social problems. And so I think companies are being drawn into these polarized dynamics, and it almost seems as if trying to take a nuanced middle ground is the way to getting everybody yelling at you more than ever. But I think we've come to equate speaking up with action in a way that is problematic. We've come to expect senior leaders to opine on everything out there. And I think it's raised expectations that companies can't fulfill. It's driven this perception of hypocrisy and it's driven the backlash. So I think we need to just kind of go out there and say that you don't necessarily need to take a position on every single thing that happens, that the social media mob will move on to a new issue in a minute. What you do need to do is get very, very clear about your core values and your commitments and the problems that you're suggesting that you solve, and get very clear about alignment. So I think a big factor pushing all this focus on hypocrisy is that companies, for good reason, are struggling to get their internal ducks in a row. Most of the problems we're facing, I'm thinking about inequality or DEI or climate change or even something new emerging like AI, they don't sit neatly in one division or one function anymore. Very often, you know, there will be a role for HR and risk and ethics and compliance and sustainability and the senior leadership team and government relations. And so I think part of the struggle is understanding who's accountable for what and how we can make these more holistic decisions across the organization. So I think another thing that can be focused on that's really constructive is thinking about those internal governance mechanisms and setting up a very clear process to consider, do we need to speak up on this issue? Do we need to take a position on this issue? Or can we in fact just have an internal conversation or send an internal message and sit this one out? And I think a lot of leaders are waiting for permission to say that that's okay. And a lot of leaders I speak to have become exhausted with the overpromising, and there's a real sense it needs to stop, but no one is quite sure how to do so. So I try to provide a way out of that thicket as part of this book.
Sometimes what businesses think of as ethics and what the general public thinks of as ethics don't exactly align, especially around elements of business that can be both unavoidable and unpleasant, like laying people off during an economic downturn. What can business leaders do to ensure that what they think of as ethics and business integrity resonates not just in the boardroom and in the meeting room, but out in the public also?
Yeah, so I think there's been a very problematic equation of ethics with managing reputational and regulatory risk. So we're not so much focused on fundamental principles. We're focused on keeping the compliance monitor out of the building and telling a nice story about all the wonderful things we're doing. And then, to your point, the topic has become very fraught. So if you raise questions of ethics, you'll very often get this reaction of, oh, well, it's really tough. It's really ideological. It's really divided out there. How are we possibly supposed to take a position or have any values when everyone disagrees so much? And in response to that, I often give a couple of examples because I think there is this sort of misperception that all these questions are hopelessly polarized and partisan and ideological. And so Hertz, the car company, has just paid a huge fine for having its customers arrested when it in fact lost its cars in car lots somewhere. Or we can think about Amazon workers being made to, warehouse workers being made to work around a dead body. Or we can think about the Norfolk Southern train crash. And I think in all three cases, what is happening is those companies are not centering their ethics efforts on their impact on human beings, but they're rather thinking about how to manipulate reputation and to manipulate the regulator for their own advantage. And I think if we center our efforts on that impact, on the need to treat human beings with dignity and respect, I think we will find that the questions are less partisan. And that in fact, most of the general public agrees that companies should not be doing any of the things I just listed.
A lot of companies talk about mission, vision, and values. You end your book with a really compelling chapter about what it means for companies to determine their purpose. So with that in mind, should companies have a chief purpose officer? And what kind of people would you want to see considered for that role?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's a coincidence that the people that like the term purpose the most are branding consultants. And I also think there's a bit of a tendency out there that whenever any new problem comes up, we do need a chief X officer. So we need a chief medical officer during the pandemic, or now we need a chief AI officer, or we need a chief happiness officer. So maybe the chief purpose officer should be the head of ethics and compliance, and maybe the head of ethics and compliance should reimagine their role to be more strategic, more of a senior leadership role, to consider issues beyond the law, to consider topics like ESG and political spending, and can we operate in this market or not, and what really are our guiding principles. So one of the messages I think of the book, especially for your audience, is the need for that more sort of senior strategic integrity function. So I don't think I'd carve out purpose, but I would see purpose as the outcome of getting these other things right. And I think for the right leader in ethics and compliance, it's kind of never been a better time to push for a more senior and strategic role.
Allison, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about Higher Ground, but more importantly, to share your insights on the ongoing transformation and advancement of business integrity itself. It's been wonderful to talk with you.
It's been such a pleasure to talk to you too, Bill, and thank you so much for having me.
Higher Ground is available now from Harvard Business Review Press, wherever fine business books are sold. Be sure to pick up your copy today. And to stay up to date on Allison's latest podcasts, articles, and more, visit allisontaylor.co. I'm Bill Coffin, and this has been the Ethicast. For more episodes, please visit the Ethisphere YouTube channel at youtube.com/ethisphere. And if this is your first time enjoying the show, please make sure to like and subscribe on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks so much for joining us. And until next time, remember, strong ethics is good business. Ethics doesn't just happen. You need to put in the time. So make sure to register for the 15th Annual Global Ethics Summit, a live and virtual event in Atlanta, Georgia, from April 22nd through the 24th. Save $200 by using the code ETHICAST at registration. To learn more, visit attendges.com.